Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Hello, I'm Lorena Turner, host of New Books in Photography. I'm a photographer and a lecturer in the communication department at the California State Polytechnic University in Pomona, California. Recently, I had the honor of speaking with Mickey Kratzman about his book, The Resolution of the Suspect, which was published earlier this year as a co-project of the Peabody Museum Press and Radius Books of Santa Fe, New Mexico. Mr. Kratzman is a photojournalist and an activist. He's based in Israel, and his work is centered around the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. As a recipient of the Robert Gardner Fellowship in Photography in 2011, which is given by the Peabody Museum of Archaeology and Ethnography, Mr. Kratzman was able to continue to develop the five projects that are represented in this book. Supported throughout the book by text by Ariella Azoulay, The Resolution of the Suspect looks at the wanted men, individuals sought by the Israeli state, and the every man and every woman on the street who, by virtue of being Palestinian in a particular time and place, can be seen as the suspect. I hope you enjoy our conversation and that you will seek out Mr. Kratzman's book. Hello and welcome to New Books in Photography. I'm Lorena Turner, and today I'm talking with Mickey Kratzman. He's a photographer and photojournalist, and he is going to tell us about his new book called The Resolution of the Suspect. Welcome to the show, Mickey.
Thank you very much.
It's really an honor to talk with you because this is such a fantastic, fantastic book. So I'm really looking forward to learning more about it from your perspective.
Yes, please.
If you could start by telling me a little bit about where you were born and where you were raised and how you got into photography.
I was born in Argentina, Buenos Aires, 1959, and me and my family, we moved to Israel in 1971. The way I found myself in photojournalism was in the mid-80s, was a kind of coincidence. I learned photography before, but I never thought about photojournalism. But as I was, since I was very young, involved in political issues, once there was a chance to work in as a photojournalist, I thought that maybe it's a good platform to be part of the events and to say something about what is going on in my place.
And what kind of stories were you interested in telling as a photojournalist back in the 1980s?
At the beginning, it was not very clear. I knew that I'm going to work around the Palestinian Israeli conflict, but I mean, 1 year after the beginning of my work, it was the first intifada took place, and since then on, it was quite obvious that I am going to work in the occupied territories, and I do so till today. Even if I don't work anymore for newspapers or magazines, and I do more works that are personal works, independent works, project that I do and I show in galleries and museums for the last two decades. Yes, that's what I do.
So we're going to talk about your new book, The Resolution of the Suspect, that just came out
earlier this summer or the late spring of this of 2016. Can you tell me a little bit about what this book is about?
Yes, the beginning of the project was based in some actions that I did in 2010. I was the head of the photography department in Bezalel Academy of Art, and from the window of my office, I could see the downhill, the Palestinian village of Isawiya. And the angle and the way that I saw the village was like from the top. And I thought that maybe it's the same way that the drones or army aircrafts could see the same people. Mm-hmm. And I used a lens that was used by the army drones. And I thought about the seeing or the look or the appearance, I may say, of the targeted killing image before the targeted killing takes place. So I started to take photos from the top of the hill, downhill, the Palestinian village, and I create a series of images like that. You know, once you use this optical, everyone looks like a suspect. A year later, I was invited to a wedding in the refugee camp of Jenin. I thought that maybe I will take with me some photos that I took around 2007. It was a parade by wanted people in the refugee camp, and asked people to recognize if they are victims out of targeted killing or snipers killing. And I came back home and they recognized among my images like 22 people that were targeted killing or by drones or by snipers. Then I decided that obviously it's impossible to go to all the villages and Palestinian cities with your archive. And I decided to scan my archive to isolate each image, each face that appear in my 30 years work archive, and I started to upload them to a Facebook page and ask what's happened to the people. The name of the Facebook page is Mickey Kratzman, People I Met. And suddenly there were comments about martyrs, about people that are doing well, about people that died because of sickness, and personal stories about people. And it's a kind of a new format of a public archive built by a community of people that are sharing knowledge about my photos or the people that I met. And it doesn't matter if there were a portrait of a people that I knew that I'm going to meet, or just people that by chance appear in my photos, even in the background or in any other way. The possibility of creating a new format of archive took me back to other moments or situations or what we may call photography events that had something to do with the term of a suspect or the way that a photography event takes place. I want to add that the text in the book were made by Dr. Ariela Azoulay. It was also a result of a long journey that we did together, conversations for almost, I think that since 1993. It's also part of the process.
So as I'm understanding you and the way that you're describing the book, it sounds like you had three different sections or three different kind of approaches that you were taking in your photography, in your photographic work over a period of time. And then simultaneous to that, you're having these discussions with Dr. Azoulay And this is what the book is, kind of a compendium of all of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's also a reflection. You know, it was a great opportunity to have a reflection about all your work and not just based on one project that you do and you know the beginning at the end. And if, even if in the beginning it looks like that, later on you find out that it's in a way about all your work as a photojournalist, as an artist, as an activist in the same area with different point of views, and not only the work for the newspaper the day after. And I have to say that from the very beginning, I understood, even when I worked for a daily newspaper, that my work, it's more important to think about my work, not in terms of the day after, but more than anything about the archive that you create.
The archive you create, right, right, absolutely. So what I like about this book are numerous things, that there's a multifaceted quality to the book in general. So it's organized into five different sections. And it provides these, it's almost like different perspectives or different ways to look at the conflict, the way people fit into the conflict, the way photography functions for you as a tool, as a documentarian, as an archivist. Tell me a little bit about the organization or the construction of the book.
I have to say that the order of the book, it's not linear. I mean, another component, very important component of the book, it's a kind of metadata of the work. And what I mean by metadata of the work, I'm talking not only about the comments that the people send me, but also the way I elaborate my work. I organize a lot of images from my sketchbooks, that it's a kind of reflection about the work I did, and at the same time, how I it's how to think about the next step in the book or the next step in my work. So the order of those five chapters are more about how I did develop the work, but not it's not a chronological order. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is in the beginning, it's not necessarily the beginning. You can follow the dates of the work, so you can understand that I am going both forward and back all the time. And it's more, I would say that the order of the chapters are connections I did about thoughts that I had during the process, and not necessary to start at the beginning and to end at the end.
Right, right. I understand. I was reading the preface, was written by Jeffrey Quilter, and he has this wonderful quote about your work, and I thought about it a lot as I was looking at the book, about this quote, and I wanted to ask you something about it. So he writes that your work challenges our expectation of content, genre, style, and even the notion of photography. And I'm wondering if you could tell us how you see photography fitting into the objectives of your work. So your work, I'm thinking, because I also saw your lecture at the School of Visual Arts that you gave in May, and you called yourself an activist, or maybe someone else called you an activist, but that word was mentioned, and you did just mention it in our interview. And I'm wondering if this idea of your work kind of challenging the notion of photography, how you see that connecting to your work as an activist.
I would like to begin with the fact that I really believe that photography is a political action from the very beginning of inclusion and exclusion. It's a political decision, what is going to be, what you show and what you don't show. Mm-hmm. where you put your legs when you're going to take an image from the very beginning, at home, outside, in the occupied territories, in a war zone, and those different places that you locate yourself to work, it's a political decision from the very beginning. Now, I really believe that if not immediately, but as an as the power of an archive, all those images create a kind of database of knowledge, of time, of a situation, of power. So once you locate all those images and you give the context of the images, you already are an activist. I have to say that another hat that I have, I am the co-founder and chairman of board of an organization named Breaking the Silence, that it's about soldiers that are giving testimonies about what they do in the occupied territories. Now, I don't see the gap between those two roles that I do, or three roles, my academic work, my activist work as a photographer, my activist work in this organization. It's all those functions create my identity. So when I am going to take photos, all those, everything I mentioned it now are part of my identity when I take photos. Now, we have this issue with photography, especially when we are talking about photojournalism, that we look everything in a very positivistic way. That's what happened. That this is the place. That it's how it looks like. But it's not. And if it challenged photography, it challenged photography because from the very beginning, you know that your images are open to different way of reading. And the same fact that you see two people that are thinking or see the place in different way, they will have a different read images. If you know it in advance when you are going to take photos, that is what challenged the photography.
Interesting. That's really very interesting. Dr. Azoulay said that the decisions you make are both political and photographic. That's what I wanted to say. The decisions you make are both political and photographic. Are you carrying with you those political objectives when you are photographing?
You know, the same way that I take my both legs to work, mm-hmm. I take those all those concepts with me when I am there. I mean, it's not something that you say, okay, now I'm working according to this or that, or not. It's part of your identity. The act of photography from the very beginning is a kind of self-portrait. It's the image that you can't see. You see what is in front of the camera, but immediately you can understand what's happened behind the camera. You understand where the photographer was standing. You understand more than you see in the image. And this kind of self-portrait, it's not something that you can say, okay, now I'm dealing with this situation from a political point of view, or I'm dealing with this situation only from the photographic point of view. There is no such a thing like that. It's you, Mickey Kratzman, or you, Lorena Turner, in this situation taking photos, and when I'm thinking about me or you taking photos, it's a very holistic way of seeing you. It's you, but what everything that makes you being you. I don't know if I'm clear enough.
No, you are. I mean, speaking using that word holistic, and it allows for me to understand that, you know, as beings, we're complex with, you know, multiple facets to who we are, you know, as you were just describing yourself, and you're not separated from those at different times. You're kind of moving through, you know, your life and your work and what you do, containing that and possessing an awareness of that at all times, even though you may not be, you know, absolutely in touch with it, you know, as you're doing what you do. Or as I'm doing what I do, but it certainly makes sense.
I wanted to add that, you know, people may confuse my role as a photographer. For example, I never took photos in other places that had different conflicts. Like, I would never take photos in Kosovo. I would never take photos in Rwanda. And I don't critique the people that are going to do it, but I am not a war photographer. I take photos of my place. And this is a very important component or data about my work, because when I was talking about my identity, it's my identity as an Israeli in this conflict.
Well, I think that's very clear, and that's a very important part of your work to address. So another question I have about the book is, each section of the book is started by a separately bound kind of section of text, and then the group of photos that that relate to that come afterwards.
Yes.
And it's a different, like, it's very distinct. So it's a different scale than the rest of the text is a different scale than the photographic portion. The paper stock is designed to look differently than the paper that the photos are printed on. Why make the book in this manner with these distinctions?
You know, from the very beginning, we understood that the book is going to be very eclectic, very eclectic. As I said before, it's not a chronological order. Mm-hmm. It's eclectic because the kind of images are not part of one body of work. And because of that, we thought that with those division, we can introduce the kind of images and subject we are going to talk. And we are going to, there are some interviews with Michael Sfard, a human rights lawyer, with the most wanted guy in the refugee camp of Jenin, with a soldier that used to be in a very specific commando unit. So in order to create all those interviews and texts and photos relevant to the chapter, we understood that maybe we should make this kind of order with the help of the graphic designers from Radius Books and put things more together in a way.
I see. That's an interesting way to do that in terms of those two details of scale and then paper, the quality of the paper. I think the second section in the book is called Targeted Killing.
Yes.
And it starts off with a quote from you about using the camera. And in this, you say that the very first line, lifting a camera is a very violent act. What do you mean when you say this?
You know, I teach since the late 80s, and I met a lot of students that they say that they don't like to take photos of people at the street. I perfectly understand how difficult it is, because, you know, when you walk in the streets and you see someone in a bus station and you stand near him, even if you stare, and if there is a kind of conversation by gaze, it's acceptable. But once you use the camera in this situation, it's very violent, because you have to explain why is the reason that you use the camera. It's all the time, it's like you have to explain to the people that you take photos of them, to yourself why you use the camera, and it's always something that it's unexpected many times. Sometimes it's not easy to explain why you use the camera. Those days that the images, you know, when you take an image, it's not like years ago that you take it to the lab and you elaborate and you develop and you consider what to do with it. Sometimes you send it. It's a protocol of knowledge that you send it automatically from the field. And I can understand how those people that see you with the camera have doubts about where is going to show my face. Mm-hmm. And this is a very problematic, powerful, violent event.
Do you, I like that question a lot, because I am extremely aware of that when I'm photographing on the street, of how there is, you know, how there's the possibility of how that person is going to interpret my action of taking their picture, and there could be a confrontation, you know, either a high confrontation or low confrontation, some confrontation that could happen afterwards. And so I think what I'm saying is I'm just very, very in tune with that. I'm very aware of that as I'm out photographing. What do you say to people when you are, what do you say to people about taking their picture? Do you ask them first? Do you talk with them afterwards? Like, what is, do you have a particular method, or is it kind of situationally dependent?
It depends, because it's a kind of agreement that you have with those people. What I mean is, you know, if you are going to a demonstration, you are there with your cameras, there's nothing to explain. It's very clear who you are and why you are there. And the contract is quite clear, even if they don't know what you are going to do with their images. Sometimes there are situations that it's not that clear, but if you have a camera hanging on your neck, it looks like you are going to use it. Sometimes I ask permission but it depends on the situation. It depends on even of the need of creating an image. Sometimes there is no need. And sometimes there is such a need that you can't not to do it. So I can't really answer to this question considering one situation. It's difficult, and every time that I use my camera, I consider the situation and I say, okay, now it's okay, or now it's not.
And do you think people now are more aware of, well, let me back up and say this. I think that that people outside of photography, so those people who are not photographers, are, you know, kind of in the way that, you know, people who, I mean, everyone's a kind of a photographer now. So now I'm trying to think of how to describe, you know, make a distinction between people who are, you know, more kind of in the professional kind of photojournalism, storytelling, documentary storytelling realm, and those people who are doing that, but maybe, you know, have an audience that's based on online, like on Instagram and Facebook. But my question is really more about people out in the world who you're photographing, that there's maybe people now have a better understanding of themselves as political beings and how their image can be kind of interpreted as in a political way. And maybe that's part of the reason why there is, you know, a hesitancy to be photographed. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You know, I think that what is fascinating about what's happened now with photography is that we are very close to something that I call ultra visibility. And what I mean by ultra visibility is that everything became an image. Like the CCTV in the cities, mm-hmm. the satellite, the street view, the Google, the Instagram, and who knows what we are going to use tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we are exposed all the time to be photographed. I don't know how many hundreds of times you are photographed when you walk one day in the city of London. And the question is, if you are, who have the power to see everything? And my concept is that I would like very much to share this possibility of seeing everything. And if you are going back to my practice, I think that I am a very, very insignificant part of this ultra visibility that I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you specifically about the section of your book called Not Afraid to be Photographed.
Yeah.
Which is the third section of the book. Describe for me a little bit about what's contained within that section, and then what were your intentions and objectives with those images?
You know, there is one character in the book. His name is Zacharias Beydi. Zacharias Beydi was the most wanted guy in the occupied territories during the year 2002, 2001, 2003, and a few years later on. And I knew that I'm going to meet him, and I was quite sure that there is no any chance that I will be allowed to take a portrait of him, because nobody knew how he looks. Mm. When he came to the interview, at the end of the interview, I asked him, "You see, I have to take a photo of you." And I was going to say that I don't care to do it out of focus, or if you want to cover his face. But before I said that, he said, "No problem." Mm-hmm. So he came to me with the intention of to expose himself. And I worked like in a very commercial 1 hour photo lab, that someone need to take a photo for his ID. And I said, okay. And I took a straight portrait of his face, like I know that it's going to the security intelligence forces, and they will spread it all over and say, "Thou is how this wanted guy Zacharias Beydi looks." And this is the real meaning out of not afraid to be photographed. During the years, I met a lot of friends of Zacharias, not only in the refugee camp in Jenin, in other places, and I saw it again and again, that it's a confrontation they have through my camera, but not with me.
So beyond Zacharias, who's photographed and whose portrait appears in that section, there are many other people who are photographed as well, correct?
Yes, those were people that they decided to show themselves. They decided that they are not afraid anymore to be exposed to I don't know who.
Yeah, that was my question. Who were they liberating themselves from?
I think that it was like a decision not to be, or let's say that was a decision to show the army that they are not afraid to be recognized. It was a kind of act of power. That's the only way I could see it at that time. And I was a kind of tool that they used. And I was really ready to be the tool, to be used, like a kind of, even I would say, a kind of public relation job. It was okay.
The section that comes after that is the portrait, is death delayed in a photograph. And that's this kind of amazing archive of faces of people. Wait, I'm sorry. Is that correct? Is death delayed in a photograph is the, no, that's out of frame with, is the final section with the Facebook kind of archive.
You're talking about the death delayed in photograph.
Right.
Is the recognition of the people from the refugee camp of Jenin that were killed by the Israeli army. This is the event in the wedding.
Right. So you photographed. So originally there was a gathering of people in 2007, correct? Which was the wedding or was not the wedding?
No. In 2007, there was a parade by wanted people in the refugee camp of Jenin. Mm-hmm. Thousands of people that were full armed walked in the refugee camp as a demonstration of power. was quite a huge event. Many people came, not only from Jenin, but from other cities to this parade. And I took photos, you know, it was a kind of photo opportunity, I even would say. But 4 years later, when I was invited to the wedding in the refugee camp of Jenin, and I was already in the process of the targeted killing, I thought that in my archive, there might be a lot of faces of people that were casualties out of targeted killing or any other method of execution of casualties out of fights or confrontations. And I came to the wedding and I asked the father, my friend, that he was a wanton from the refugee camp, and I asked him if I am allowed to show people some prints that I wrote. I took with me like 250 prints, small prints, with a lot of faces from this event, from the parade, and I took two markers with me, and I asked people to do a circle around the faces of those casualties, and I came back home with 22 faces of martyrs that were recognized by the people in the wedding.
Wow. Wow. So then that to me seems to be like a logical lead in to the last section of the book, which is the out of frame, which is the collection of the kind of the images, the portraits that you, from your archives that you had taken over a long period of time and then kind of isolated the faces and then put them up on Facebook for people to kind of fill in kind of the history and information about those people.
Yes, it was quite clear that I will not be able to build a project out of my prints or my archive with more than 20,000 films and go around the cities and villages in Palestine to ask people if they recognize them. And then the option was to connect myself to the Facebook for the first time and to learn a little bit about it. And I thought that the concept of my project can be a really Facebook project because it's a book of faces. Mm-hmm. It's an archive. It's a community work. It's a cooperation work. It's a new method or a new platform that I can share an archive and collect knowledge about the archive. Even, you know, if I'm not the archivist in the term that I don't write the comments and I don't correct them and I don't edit them. So I keep the form of language and words that they use to describe what's happened to that people. The only thing that I do, I write what's happened to the people in the photograph. It's a B language, it's in English and it's in Arabic. I write the year and the place that I took the photo and I put the crop. Till now I uploaded more than 7,000 portraits. I got like the comments that describe what's happened to about 1,000 people out of the 7,000. There are like 14,000 followers. Most of them are Palestinians. So it's a kind of, I may call it a community that contributes to this project. And yes, it's a new way, I think, or a different way of collecting knowledge, but at the same time to give back to those people their own images. Most of the people that appears in newspapers, they never have the chance to see themselves. And this is an opportunity to give them back something.
And when you initially started the project, how did people find you or find out about the project? How did that audience, how did you attract that community?
Complicated. A lot of hours of work. I have a lot of Palestinians, friends, and when I opened this Facebook, at the same time I opened a personal page. Mm-hmm. And through this page, I promote the project page, and I ask friends to promote the page, and it was a lot of hour of correspondence with people through the Facebook. It took me a lot of time. Now it works by himself, but at least for the first year, I worked a few hours a day on the Facebook. Yes, at least 4 or 5 hours a day.
Were people hesitant at all to get involved and give you responses, or was that, or were people very happy and open accepting is not the right word. I mean, like, just happy to contribute.
I think that it took almost a year to get the first comment.
Really? Wow.
A lot of likes, but the first comment took almost a year. A lot of people have doubts about who I am.
Sure.
So what I do, I send them a link to my gallery, some photos of me in the field. I answer to their questions, and I perfectly understand why I became a suspect. I'm very happy to say that at the end there is a dialogue, and out of this dialogue, everything came together. They were just two portraits that people asked me to take them off from the page, and it was for personal reasons, and I did it immediately.
Do you remember what that first comment was that came after a year into the project?
Yes, I know that man.
Really?
That was the comment. And I hesitate, and I didn't ask anything about it. Usually I don't ask anything beside that. If there is a comment, I ask if he is in good health. That is the only question that I do, mm-hmm. and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Right. It seems like something where you would want little intervention.
The less as possible, because I don't want it to look like a kind of interrogation, you know.
Right.
And I don't want to embarrass people. So what they give me is that what I have, what I get, and it's enough. I really don't have to go to details. It's not that I am going to build the biography of any one of those people, mm-hmm. but just to know in general terms if he's okay or not.
Right.
The most extreme example, it was a young boy that took photos of him in 2003. We even played football together in the street. And 10 years later, I uploaded his photo. And at the same day, he was killed by the Israeli army. There was mutual shooting between him and the soldiers. But he died the same day that I uploaded his face, yes.
Wow. And you must have learned that shortly after you posted the image of the coincidence?
Actually, what I do, I upload four or five faces early morning, mm-hmm. And then I go to work, and I found out 1 hour or 2 hours later on that what happened about the event, and it was scheduled, and the upload was, I don't remember when during the day, but in the evening when I came home, I saw the comments.
Oh, I see. Wow. That's a pretty powerful coincidence. What are you working on now?
Since 5 years ago, I am working on a project together with the Bedouin community in the south of Israel, in the Negev. We are building together a kind of Bedouin image archive, but it's an archive that what I do, I travel among all the unrecognized villages. Unrecognized villages are villages that they are constantly in the risk of being evacuated by the government. What I do is I know that they are not going, I hope they am wrong, but some of them are not going to be there anymore. What I do, I create a kind of record of their situation today. Mm-hmm. And I take photos of architecture, portraits, still life, cars, landscape, to create a kind of visual archive that is based on location, with the metadata of the location of the images, and the base for the archive is the map. And I hope that we will not need in the future to find that in those places now we planted trees or we created Jewish settlement. But the archive will give the option to go to the same location and see how the place changed during the years. This is very vaguely the idea of the new project.
Is this something that, so you said that this is something you've been working on for 5 years, so it started about 5 years ago?
It started about 5 years ago. I went to live for 1 month in one of those unrecognized villages, mm-hmm. that are disconnected from electricity and water, that they are all the time in the risk of being evacuated. The people are afraid to breathe. They know that there is going to be a relocation. And since my kind of residency in this place, I create a record of all those villages.
And have you seen in that time period of 5 years, have you seen small changes? So maybe not evacuations, but just small changes in terms of how people are living and how they're organizing where it is that they're living, that you're kind of evidencing in your photographs?
Small changes is less to say, because I saw demolitions of houses, evacuation of villages. That's happened almost daily.
I see. So when you said earlier that you hope that, I don't know how to repeat exactly what you said, but the essence was that you hope that the images that are being taken kind of now as a record of this moment, that they are, that things won't change. That hasn't proven to be true at all, that there is this kind of upending that's happening, and your photos are kind of telling this story of a different time period, of a past. They're active right now, your photos, for this project.
Absolutely. I think that this is also the essence of an archive, that you organize images in such a way that even by the organization, before you see the images, you understand the system, you understand a reality in center point of time. And then when you see this order again, you see that it doesn't fit with the reality in the future. Mm-hmm. And you see the past, what is now for us the present, with a different perspective. And this is the essence of the archive. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason that the project, it's about building an archive.
I want to thank you so much for your time and your really incredible answers. Thank you very, very much. I have one final question for you, going back to your book, The Resolution of the Suspect. Where can people who are listening to our conversation, where can they find your book to buy it?
I know that it's available in Amazon, and also in the website of Radio's book, and it was my pleasure.